so don't delay. And thank you for supporting Community Radio, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd in Duver, Oregon. What the Festival is an annual electronics festival which this year features the Glitch Mob, Washed Out, Nightmares on Wax, and more. There will also be a hookah lounge, relaxation huts, and the largest disco ball on the West Coast. Again, that's What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd at the Wolf Run Ranch in Duver, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11 a.m. and it's time for Stage and Studio with your host, D-May Roberts.
This is Stage and Studio. I'm D-May Roberts. We're listening to music by David Ornette Cherry from his CD, This Is Different. Find out more at davidornettecherry.com. We're celebrating the 30th anniversary of FAME, P-H-A-M-E, FAME, a premier nonprofit community arts group in Portland. We'll talk with FAME Executive Director Stephen Mark Bedouin and Artistic Director Jessica Dart. For the last 30 years, FAME has been making the arts available to adults with developmental and physical disabilities. So we're going to hear more about that. Also on today's show, we're starting a summer series of original art stories, audio art stories from graduates of Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. Our first feature comes from producer Kayleen Beaujolais. She brings us Three Sisters Nixtamal, a local company that takes an anthropological approach to artisan food. Plus a ticket giveaway to Portland Center Stage's Lizzie Borden rock music play. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm D-May Roberts in the studio today. I'm welcoming back Stephen Mark Bedouin, and he's the executive director of FAME, and with him is FAME's artistic director Jessica Dart. So welcome back, Stephen.
Welcome, D-May. It's great to see you again.
And welcome to you, Jessica.
Thank you.
It's both good to have you here. And so, Stephen, you've been working with FAME for 4 years now. Can you believe it's been 4 years?
I can't believe it's been 4 years, but I'm amazingly not the most senior staff member. Jessica's been at FAME longer than me.
How long have you been there?
I have been at FAME for 5 years.
5 years. Ah, so you guys have been, you know, you've been working pretty hard during those last 4 or 5 years. And you've visited the studio before, Stephen, before you became executive director, though.
Yeah, yeah. My life as a musician and
it was all independent art stuff, and I had the fortune to have you sing live in the studio. And you know what? I hope to entice you to sing live again because I think our listeners remember that.
they may,
and they'll go, "Oh, I want to hear Stephen sing again." But today we're talking about FAME, and 2 years ago I featured FAME in a half-hour documentary special, and you're gearing up for several events to celebrate the 30th anniversary. Can you believe it? An upcoming one is the birthday bash on June 26th at the Castaway. It's an event space at 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. And for those who are new to hearing about FAME, would you give us sort of an overview of the programs? I don't know if, Jessica, you wanted to start?
Sure. So FAME is a nonprofit arts organization, and we focus on working with adults who have various developmental disabilities. And our students range in age from 17 to, we've had students that are over 70. So we don't limit based on age. And we offer continuing education classes in the gamut of arts. So visual art, music, playwriting, acting, dance, movement, creative writing, all of those things. And we also offer performance opportunities. So at the birthday bash, you'll get to see about 50 of our students.
50?
50. And they will be performing, the drumming class will be performing, the choir will be performing, and it'll just be an amazing party.
So 50 people at the Castaway.
Yes.
Huh? All right. So that sounds, that's not unusual, though. You usually get a lot of people, and especially with these big musicals that you've done in the past, too.
Definitely. Over the years, we've done numerous musicals, and we've had casts of up to 50 people. And if our entire choir is somewhere performing, it'll be 60 people strong.
So you manage the entire performing arts program, then?
Yes, with Matthew Gailey, who's our music director.
And so you both managed to find, how many classes do you offer, and, you know, how can people find out about that?
We offer usually between 20 to 22 classes per term, and most people have found us through word of mouth or through transition programs, but more information can be found on our website at famepdx.org.
But you offer it year-round, right?
Mostly year-round. We take a break during the summer for, you know, people like to go on vacation. But we are preparing for things like the Mississippi Street Fair coming up and the Birthday Bash and our variety show that we have coming up in August. But our regular classes are out of session right now.
Because, Stephen, in doing the Fame documentary special 2 years ago, and it was 2 years ago, you told me that people had heard it and they didn't realize that Fame was around, and you got more students. You had people saying, oh, I didn't realize that I could bring my son or my daughter to this experience.
Yeah, and it's amazing. For an organization that's been in business for 30 years, we were founded in December 1984, so this December will literally have been 30 years. We're still building our brand, or we're still building our community engagement and awareness. The population that we serve is unique. It's a adults with developmental disabilities, and this is a population that faces a lot of challenges in access to education, access to programs and services, social isolation, negative stigma, excuse me, and the reason that we're here is that we want to support individuals in realizing their full potential as people, as artists, as performers, and we're still only scratching the surface of the number of people that we can serve. Our model, though, is that we'd rather serve fewer people in a deeper way. We could serve hundreds or thousands of individuals in these little light touches, but we have found that, especially in the arts, a deeper engagement, coming in, taking classes, and for some students it's a few classes, for some students it's 4 or 5 days a week, every day, classes, rehearsals, workshops, and it's really driven by their artistic interests. But we know that when people participate in the arts, when they learn as artists, when they perform and create as artists, their lives are better, they're healthier, they create community, and they're better people that are more likely to be successful.
So do you charge for these classes?
Or? We do. It's a sliding scale.
Yeah, so anybody could really take them.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want the cost of classes to ever be a barrier to participating.
Well, it sounds like you want to do long range because, you know, people, you get to know the 50 people that are in your shows, right?
Very well. I mean, this is, you know, there's a little bit of element of Glee around Fame.
So there you go.
The students would love to say that Fame and Glee are basically the same.
There you go. Well, you know, that's good. I mean, that camaraderie is what I'm hearing.
The community, absolutely.
The community.
Absolutely. Not only at Fame, but also outside of our walls, because we're working with artistic partners so that they themselves can become more open to working with these artists. And everyone, and Dime, I saw you last night at this reading at Portland Center Stage for Colored Girls, and everyone in Portland is thinking and talking about equity and diversity in the arts. And we're here to say disability needs to be on part of that conversation.
Oh, it is. It is part of that conversation. Definitely.
Absolutely. And developmental disability, physical disability, and artists with disabilities have so much to offer. And so we're working with all of our partners in schools, partners in mainstream artistic institutions, including Portland Center Stage, to make sure that they also are including artists with disabilities in their programs.
Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. I'm here with my guests, Stephen Mark Badouin and Jessica Dart, both from Fame. And to find out more about the arts opportunities that they have there at Fame, you can visit their website at Fame, P-H-A-M-E, PDX.org, or you can go to stageandstudio.org and get that information too. Yeah, I know that Stephen, in talking to you in the past, that you have a personal reason, a personal connection to why you first were a volunteer and then you became the executive director, but you really had a personal connection to this community first.
I think everyone, you don't have to scratch too far to find someone who has a personal connection to an individual with a developmental disability, whether it's a family member, a friend, a colleague, someone that lives next door to you. And I think every person on our staff, every teacher, every board member, obviously every parent and family member has a personal connection. I think what's interesting that we found, DeMay, is that when we perform, when we produce performances in art, people are surprised not only by what the artists and performers can achieve, but also their own personal connection to persons with developmental disabilities. And that, the point is to, you know, bring them out into the open, into the mainstream. It's happening in education. We want inclusive, integrated opportunities. And you don't usually have to scratch too far to find a personal connection. For me, it was my best friend growing up, this guy, Jeremy, who was most notable for always beating me at Tetris and Super Mario Brothers. And I didn't know that he was any different than anyone else until about junior high, when it really became evident that, wow, he was a kid with Down syndrome. Wow, he did not have the same access to opportunity that I had. And that always stuck with me.
Well, Jessica, is it fair to say that these kinds of arts opportunities that you offer, you know, the visual arts and the playwriting, the performing arts, would these opportunities be as available in mainstream arts groups?
It's likely that they would not be. One of the things that we really want to do is to create access and to cultivate an interest and the skill in the students that we have, and then kind of arm them with those skills so they may be more able to go out and seek out a mainstream opportunity. So we really want to treat our students as equal artists and be able to help them get out into the mainstream if they have that desire and that ability. And
have they gone to the mainstream? Sorry, Stephen.
Yeah. We do have a couple of students who audition pretty regularly for community theater plays.
And have they gotten in, though?
They have on occasion.
Okay, good. Good. I want to hear that.
Yeah. Debbie McKnight in particular is one of our students who, I mean, she's always been fiercely independent, and she's been out on her own for years auditioning in the community, and she has on occasion gotten parts, and she is just so thrilled and proud of herself, and we're also proud of her for being persistent and dealing with what every actor has to deal with, which is rejection. And she deals with it with grace, and she turns around and she goes back and tries again.
Well, I mean, I as much as I love theater and as much as I love the arts, I find that sometimes, especially theater, can be quite discriminatory. I mean, it's just the way it's structured, you know, by type and mm-hmm. who can do what. So it's good to hear these stories where people are given a chance to, who have talent, but maybe don't fit the mold.
Absolutely. And we spend time talking about, is this part appropriate for me to audition for if I were going out in the community? How do you look at an audition announcement? What's the etiquette for these things? So we do spend time with
like
our students.
Life skills, kind of professional skills.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, so it's an all-around program that way. I've heard from many people, you know, when I was doing the documentary special, all the participants that I talked to, your students, they seem to all have a personal connection or a personal way of finding fame somehow. And Jessica, I would think that since you work so much with the theater group, that you hear a lot of these kind of stories.
Definitely. You know, and having conversations with parents who will call and say, you know what, I need something for my kid to do. Their kid might be 30, but they're like, I really need a way for my student to be able to connect with the world. And seeing students who have never done a play before come in and go through this process and realize that the cast becomes this really close-knit family and that you're creating this story together, and the empowerment that comes with that is always really incredible to watch.
Well, I think that is. I mean, it's kind of monumental in some ways, isn't it, to be able to work together that way, especially if you have a cast of 50.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard enough just to have the cast of 50, I think.
Exactly.
But when you're dealing with different skill levels and mm-hmm. abilities, you know, it's a challenge.
It definitely is. And you know, the great thing about our teaching staff and our volunteers is that we want to meet the students where they are and meet everyone's needs in an equitable way while creating an equal opportunity at the same time. So sure, rehearsal takes a little bit longer, and sure, we have to approach things in a different way, but the result is completely worth it.
Well, you've got this big birthday bash coming up, and it's June 26th, and that's at the Castaway. What type of arts are we going going to be seeing? What are you featuring in the big birthday bash?
I have to call out specifically Mr. Jason Young and his beatboxing ability.
Oh, really?
It's legendary.
Is it
this
legendary?
Guy, oh, you can't, I, okay, that alone is going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it in so many ways. But Jason will be performing with the rest of the drumming class, and you'll get some fierce beatboxing.
What kind of drumming is it?
So it's African drumming. Okay. Clifford Kaufman is our drumming teacher, and he has a background in West African drumming, and he's brought a lot of that to the students. We will see the chamber ensemble and the choir performing several songs. My favorite piece of the evening will be a costume design fashion show modeled by the students, runway show, accompanied by original music composed on iPads by the students in our iPad music lab.
Did you have a designer for the fashion show?
It was the costume design class.
Oh, so they did design
their own.
Oh.
So yeah. we've got these amazing bird costumes. We've got armor. We've got fruit. We have superheroes. I'm so excited about this.
So, Stephen, are you going to play Tim Gunn and say, make it work?
Well, I was hoping.
No, girl, I get to narrate.
I was hoping to be the banana costume walking down, but speaking of rejection, I was not accepted
as that
role.
Oh, they
didn't
like that.
No,
huh?
They didn't like that.
Yeah, you're not taking it seriously enough.
Apparently not. But
well, and the designer wants to wear her own banana.
Oh, there is
right.
A banana.
Yeah, there is a banana costume.
Like we're not even kidding.
Sorry. I misunderstood. Well, Fame has grown a lot. Besides, before we do the other part, variety show. You've got an old-timey variety show also coming up on Sunday, August 24th, too.
Yes,
so, you've got a lot of summer events here, right?
Yeah.
And so is that similar to the bash, or are you going to do more like laugh-in?
We really want it to be kind of laugh-in, old-timey. Yeah. And Tony Starlight has agreed to MC.
Oh.
So we're really excited about that.
You get a lot of community support, don't you? People volunteer a lot.
I think what people see with Fame is they see possibility. They see dynamism, they see excitement, and they see an opportunity to work with a population of artists that are too often underserved and too often under the radar. And so what we see when we bring in people like Tony Starlight, or when we bring in Storm Large, or Thomas Lauderdale from Pink Martini, or the Cello Project, these are all
Laura
folks.
Laura Gibson.
Laura Gibson, Debbie Lambenman. We'll tell you more about Laura and Debbie in a second. But these artists, when they come in and work with our artists and performers, they say, what? Why have these folks not been on my radar? Why have I, and how can I collaborate? And not because of the disability factor, not because, this is a charming group of people with disabilities that also sing and act. No, because the quality of artistry is excellent.
So it's not like a charity kind of thing,
this
right?
This
is more like there's so much joy in this.
There's so much joy and the artists that we work with, frankly, they're like any other artist. They have joys and challenges and opportunities and ideas, and the wiring may be different in some cases, but the connection and the heart and the commitment to great artistry is there 1,000%.
I believe that. From what I've seen, I believe that, and it's beautiful to watch all of that working together too. I think there's a certain honesty about the performance that I've seen. You know, it just comes from a pure place.
Absolutely, our students, for the most part, love nothing more than getting up in front of an audience and performing and feeling the love and the empowerment from saying, "Yeah, this is who we are. There's no reason for me to be ashamed or embarrassed of who I am, and this is what I can do."
So, it's amazing that you're doing this work, but I know both of you are working artists too. Do you have anything else coming up outside of Fame,
Do you want to go first, Jessica?
Else? Well, I mean, right now, okay, any playwrights who need a dramaturg, I am totally available for freelance.
There you go.
New play development is really one of my passions, and I don't currently have any projects, but I would love more.
Oh, there you go. Fame isn't keeping her busy.
Okay, that is also not true.
How about you? Are you singing anywhere, Stephen?
I'm starting, since you asked, Dima, it's very kind of you, I'm starting a duo with Heather Blackburn, who's a cellist in town. And she and I have started very quietly. You're the first to know about this.
Started a
duo, and we're going to do a series of house concerts. So we really want intimate, literally in people's homes or apartments for that matter. We want to go around and do cello and tenor duo concerts in people's homes.
So you're bringing back parlor music?
Or the salon. Yeah, we do. Yeah. We love the idea of the salon, where it's conversational, it's intimate. I gotta just plug one additional thing, which is a Fame project, but that involves other artists, which is we are commissioning a new work, a new music theater piece, and it's being written by composer Laura Gibson and playwright Debbie Lamidman. And this is one of the geniuses of Jessica's artistic direction, which is to say, let's create new work, and let's create new work that integrates mainstream artists and fame artists together. So this is the first that anyone's heard about it in the public arena on radio or anywhere, and wanted to announce it on your show. And we're doing three performances of this new work, August 2015, on the Girding Theater main stage at Portland Center
Awesome. Well, Fame has its 30th birthday bash on Thursday, June 26th, 7 p.m. Castaway, 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. Also, Variety Show, August 24th, 7 p.m. Portland Center Stages, Ellen By Studio, 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. Check out more at famepdx.org or 503-764-9718 extension 4. But get all that on stageandstudio.org. Stephen, Mark Bedouin, Jessica Dart, it's so good to have you both here, and congrats on your 30th anniversary. Have
Thank
a great
you.
Summer.
Thanks, Stephen.
It's going to be a busy summer, a good one.
I'll get you to sing next time, okay. My pretty. I promise you that. Today we're starting a summer series of original audio art stories from recent graduates of Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. Our first feature story comes, it is about corn, and it's been in the Americas for about thousands of years, and one of the local companies here focuses on ancestral traditions to bring back the ancient ways of preparing corn from seed to table. Producer Kayleen Beaujolais has this feature story on three sisters Nixtamal.
Pedro Azcarate Ferbel and Adriana Ferbel Azcarate are making masa and tortillas the traditional way, allowing consumers in the Pacific Northwest to taste corn's true flavor.
We're here at the People's Food Cooperative Farmers Market, selling tortillas for Three Sisters Nixtamal. We get the opportunity not only to provide a fresh tortilla at the market that's never been even refrigerated, these are made this morning, but I can also sell the masa and give people the tools to make their own tortillas in their own kitchen.
My name is Adriana Ferbel Azcarate. I'm from Mexico, and I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I'm dedicating right now to make organic corn tortillas that are made in the traditional way. My aunt, she was my mother's brother's wife, and she cooked really, really good. And she had all these secret recipes. Everyone wanted her recipes, but she didn't want to share them all. So when she died, my uncle asked me, like, would you like your aunt's tortilla machine? So I pretty much inherited that. Was left for me, and he asked me, would you take that to the United States? And I'm like, yeah, why not? And so I felt really excited, like, oh, okay, I'm being shown that this is something I have to continue.
The name Three Sisters originates from the symbiotic growing of maize, beans, and squash, practiced by indigenous peoples throughout the Americas. The corn becomes the stalk for the beans to climb. The beans fix nitrogen on the earth, and then the squash covers the ground, keeping moisture in and bugs out.
So this is our blue corn, and you can see it's like different varieties, and each kernel has a different story to tell. And I'm always inspired by the corn itself, knowing that it came from this wild plant called teosintle. And I'm honored to be working with that corn spirit.
So the products we make and sell are the corn itself already cooked as nixtamal. So we sell it as pozole or hominy. So you can cook it a little longer and make pozole soup. Or we ground it and grind it, and we make blue masa and yellow masa. So we have yellow corn tortillas, blue corn tortillas, espinosa entre jalapeño tortillas, guajillo pepper tortillas, and enchiladas potosinas, of course.
Santiago Olin, Pedro and Adriana's 8-year-old son, loves lending a hand in the business.
I usually help out at the farmers markets, and I do a lot of stuff. Usually I walk around and eat stuff. I help pressing the masa and making it into a tortilla, and then making it round, and then put it on the griddle and doing it.
Three Sisters Prep Kitchen is just down the street from Pedro, Adriana, and Santiago's home, full of stainless steel vats, pallets of corn, and other processing equipment.
I'm stirring the corn in this big tank, so I'm trying to get it to cook evenly. This is sort of the processing that was discovered thousands of years ago that allows the corn to become usable for making masa and tortillas. But this whole process, the steeping in lime, which is ground up limestone, it's a food grade lime that we use. Calcium hydroxide is its name. And it's pretty amazing because calcium hydroxide comes from, like, limestone beds around the world come from millions of year old seabeds.
Cooking the corn in lime is what makes it nixtamalized. When maize is prepared that way, it has many benefits over unprocessed corn. It's more easily ground and its nutritional value increases. It also tastes and smells better.
We do it 100% organic, 100% nixtamal corn. We don't mix any other flours with it, and we don't put any preservatives on it. And so that's the difference.
So this is another, this is the yellow corn, and this is ready. And because it's a broken corn, I've got a lot of broken pieces. And we prefer not to use broken corn, but this is what we got from our supplier. And our supplier told us that was just the nature of commodity corn. And we're looking for another supplier.
Farmers don't have the money to have to be able to degrain, like take all the seeds from the cob and dry it out. So we have to end up fighting with like these bigger companies that do that for them, and then they sell it to you. And sometimes the quality for a small business is hard because they will sell all the product they have to bigger companies than us. So we're always struggling to find from different sources.
If we're going to feed people in a sustainable way, we're going to need some kind of storage crops in order to feed people. And we should be thinking about the first foods of the Americas. And corn really offers the opportunity to create nutritious food for large numbers of people in compact urban areas. You know, there's nothing like a fresh tortilla. So a lot of people will talk about their experiences going to Mexico or recollections of their grandmother making tortillas in the home. And it's like fresh baked bread. It's a soul food. It's a food that really connects people to their families, to their communities, to their culture.
Well, people will love to make their own tortillas.
Oh, the taste of the tortilla after it's really good. It's kind of like with taste. I don't really know how to describe the taste, but it's a good one.
Would you like to try a tortilla?
Yes.
Three Sisters, me encanta.
And that piece was produced by Kayleen Beaujolais, a recent graduate at Mount Hood Community College's Integrated Media Program. Before we go, an announcement. Well, you heard about Lizzie Borden, right? Well, Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. Well, Lizzie, a new rock show retelling of the bloody legend of America's favorite axe-wielding double murderess. It is running through June 29th at Portland Center Stage on the main stage. And it's written by Stephen Cheslick DeMeyer, Tim Manor, and Alan Stevens Hewitt, and directed by Rose Reardon. For more info, visit pcs.org or call 503-445-3700. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to the third caller here at KBOO at 503-231-5106, 231-5106, third caller for a pair of tickets to Lizzie. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Sam Parrish. I'll have the show later online at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Also, like us on facebook.com/stage_n_studio or tweet me at @stage_n_studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going out with a song sung by Storm Large, who plays Lizzie Borden's sister in the rock music play Lizzie. Find out more at pcs.org.
When mother placed you in my arms.
Good morning. My name is Ava Lake, and thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I haven't been here in about a month, and it's been good. I went to New York. I went down south, Southern Oregon. It's all been good. I have with me today Sean Healy, who has a beautiful exhibition that's at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. I believe that's elizabethleach.com, yes?
Yes, it is.
Yes, and the show is called Extroverts.
That's right.
Right. Well, let's just talk about the title first. What does that mean?
Well, extroverts to me means it's about my friends that I grew up with. It basically revolves around my personal history of trying to bond with male figures at mm-hmm. an early age. So extroverts is sort of this group of guys that kind of adopted me at a young age. And it's kind of like an homage to them, mm-hmm. honestly.
So these were friends in school or friends yeah. in the neighborhood?
Both. I mean, I grew up in a really small town in upstate New York, graduated with 70 people. So we...
In your high school class?
In my high school class.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So we knew everybody. Uh-huh. And so I was raised... My father passed when I was at 10 years old, so... I was kind of adopted by the town. Mm-hmm. I was raised by neighbors, uncles, friends,